Bueno, no tan nerviosa, pero sí.
Got your attention. Good afternoon and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Lynn Curtis. I'm co-chair of the Arts Forum here at the club, along with Ann Smith. And I'm also the curator of exhibitions. So, hear better now? Okay. Our current artist is up. His name is Stephen Joseph. He was the Muir Woods Centennial Photographer, and his current show here is called Four Points of the Compass, which is showing a variety of landscapes in the four points of the compass of Northern California. I'd also like to thank today Wendy Shapiro, who is on our Arts Forum Committee, who organized... Go ahead and stand. She conceived and organized this show for us today, so I thank her. One other housekeeping item is that our next arts event is a tour in June of the Sculpture Site Gallery in Sonoma. This is one of the premier sculpture galleries of Northern California, with over 60 works spread out through their grounds and gardens. We will be meeting at the gallery at 11 in the morning, and we will get a private tour by the founder of the gallery. More information on this and other programs is on our website at www.commonwealthclub.org. We will have a question and answer period at the end of the program, so hold questions till then, and we'll have a microphone passed. We are recording today's program, so if you would speak clearly, we'd appreciate it. Now I'd like to introduce Jean-Pierre Lauerchette, who will be introducing today's speakers. Jean-Pierre is a fourth-generation French Aubusson tapestry weaver with studios in Berkeley and Puerto Vallarta. For the past four decades, he has collaborated on work with his wife, designer Yael Lurie, exhibiting and holding workshops internationally. He was co-founder and director of the San Francisco Tapestry Workshop and is currently textile curator at the Peter Gray Art Museum of Puerto Vallarta. Please give a round of applause for Jean-Pierre.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, an honor, especially to be next to the messengers of the future of tradition. I do have an accent, so you will have to forgive me for that. It's not Zapotec. I wish it was. For me, this is very special. I was in Oaxaca a couple of months ago, and I have witnessed the value of our visitors today. If you were to go, as the crow flies, traveling south about 2,200 miles from San Francisco, you will come to the village of Teotitlán del Valle, home of about 5,000 people in a beautiful valley not far from the city of Oaxaca. I believe that Teotitlan is Teot, is the god,
Tlan,
place,
yes.
Place of the gods. It is roughly the same distance to Cincinnati, Ohio, and yet you are landing in a different world. And the more you observe, the more different it gets. Walking the streets of Teotitlan, you will notice at first the sweet gestures of its people, the kind smiles, respectful greetings, the graceful sound of the Zapotec language. If you stop and have a peek into any of the houses, you will see a loom, or perhaps two or three, and colorful skeins like in a workshop. But you will realize that it is a family home with grandparents weaving or dyeing the yarns alongside their sons and daughters, and children playing and running around as children everywhere do, but sometimes sitting at the loom too, with pose, as if playing a serious and mysterious game. Middle Eastern textile scholar Anton Felton reminds us that from biblical times, both the dyer's art and the weaver's skill were highly prized and gave rise to substantial industries. How true this is also to the Zapotec tradition. Writing about ancient weaving communities, Felton rejoices in the thought that some of the universal virtues of textiles, the delicate endurance of the woven clothes, its pliable strength, its texture and vibrancy of color, seems to permeate the life of its practitioners and shape the value of their culture. It is this knowledge and technology that have helped the Zapotec weavers of Teotitlan preserve their way of life for hundreds of years. My friend Federico Chavez is a well-known master weaver. His oldest son, Eric, and his daughter, Janet, are visiting us today in San Francisco. Eric Chavez Santiago, not quite 30 yet, am I right?
Not yet.
In addition to his many accomplishments in the textile arts, is the coordinator of education for the Textile Museum of Oaxaca, one of the most beautiful and outstanding textile museums of the Americas. In the past decade, he has been invited to exhibit and teach among us in various universities and museums. Janet Chavez Santiago was born in 1985 and also apprenticed the textile arts at her family workshop. She has a college degree in language and is developing a Zapotec course program to the center for the Centro Cultural San Pablo, the Cultural Center San Pablo, where she works as education coordinator. It is with much pleasure that I introduce to you these two remarkable weavers and educators, Janet, Eric. Welcome.
Gracias. Okay, Eric. Muchas gracias, Jean-Pierre.
Hello. Buenas tardes. Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Mother's Day. Today's Mother's Day in Mexico, and we send Mother's Day for you. We have mothers here too. So we're very happy to be here. We're really excited to be here, actually. Thank you to Jean-Pierre for introducing us, and he's a very good friend of my family and Master Weber that we admire. Thank you. We also want to thank Wendy for making this happen. She met us in earlier this year and invited us to come to the Commonwealth Club. And thanks to my sister, of course, that she is joining us for this talk today. And we prepared a talk with a lot of information, and I'm afraid that we won't have probably all the time to talk about every topic, but we prepare in order to give you an overview, a general overview of what Oaxaca is like, and we are really interested in this topic, the future of tradition, and the context of weavers in Oaxaca. We belong to a very nice and big community of weavers. I will start by showing you where we come from in Mexico. We're located in southern Mexico. The state marked in color blue down there is where Oaxaca is, so we have a coastal region too. And within the state of Oaxaca, we have these wonderful eight different regions that the state is divided in. We come from here, the central valleys of Oaxaca. As I speak right now, there are 16 different ethnic groups in Oaxaca and 14 languages being spoken right now, all of them from native indigenous languages from this the state of Oaxaca. This is very important for me to say because we come from a place where the diversity is big, it's huge. We belong to the Zapotec group, and we speak Zapotec. We learn first Zapotec when we're children, and then as we grow up, we learn to speak Spanish. Also, Teotitlan is a village that is still ruled by the traditions and customs politics, meaning that we do not have political parties. And we have, in the whole state of Oaxaca, 571 municipalities, out of which three quarters of this number are ruled by this system, which is the indigenous original system for government in Oaxaca and in villages. The city, capital city, is also called Oaxaca. This is one of the greatest churches in all Mexico. This is the former convent of Santo Domingo. It's a 16th century building, and it's located right downtown, the heart of the city of Oaxaca. This is one of the most famous streets there in Oaxaca, the Alcalá Street, crowded with people all the time, but also galleries and museums that are very important to our place. As I was saying earlier, the biodiversity of Oaxaca is huge, and thanks to that biodiversity that has been developing for hundreds and thousands of years, we also have a huge diversity in languages, indigenous groups, food, of course, but also textiles, which is what we are here to share with you. This is a picture of the village where we come from. This is Teotitlán del Valle, located on the foothills of the Sierra Norte and Sierra Juárez there in Oaxaca. And I'm showing an image of what textile tradition is like in Oaxaca. This is the traditional indigenous backstrap loom, and this backstrap loom was the very first loom that people used in Mesoamerica and also in Teotitlán del Valle, the village where we come from. And as I was saying, every textile throughout the state is filled with encrypted, beautiful information that we, and personally I've been discovering recently by working at the textile museum. I'm just showing two examples. To my left, San Lucas Ojitlan, the name of a community that has one of the most beautiful huipiles. A huipiles is a dress that it's made out of three cloths that it's sewn then here in the center, as you can see. And Santiago Tilapa, that one combines weaving and embroidery, but we have a very big diversity of weaving techniques. Also, from pre-Columbian times, the work of spinners is and has been also a traditional way of working. This is hand-spun spinning. Hand-spun yarn made with malacate, drop spindle. And before the Spanish conquest also, the fibers that people and weavers used to work with and have around them were basically plant fibers. And basketry is very well developed and has been very well developed in this area. Black pottery, wood carving, metal workers, of course, textiles. And I'll keep showing you more and more textiles. So I love living in Oaxaca because we have this combination and balance of very traditional and very unique ways of working and in a very traditional manner. But also you will find high technology places using these amazing technologies, like the only glass studio also located in Oaxaca using oils to heat their ovens and developing this technology and recycling 95% of the total production of glass. Just wanted to share with you these images and work that it's also done. You can find both extremes, very traditional and handmade textiles as living together with the modern technology applied to those crafts. And just to tell you some more information about the Oaxaca context. The institute, the State Institute of Art and Crafts in Oaxaca, this is a government institution, last year counted 450,000 active artisans in the whole state of Oaxaca. I work at the Texas Museum in Oaxaca, and we at the Texas Museum believe that at least 10% of this number are textile producers, artists, and weavers. This is huge. I mean, we have a vast, vast diversity, and it is really, economically speaking, it creates a high impact there. Now, narrowing down to the place where we live and we come from, this is a zoom in of a map in the Central Valley of Oaxaca. This is the city of Oaxaca, and we're located about 15 miles east. Teotitlan is the name of our village. This is how it looks like. As any other Zapotec community located in this area that had the Spanish conquest, there was a Zapotec temple underneath the new Spanish or Christian temple that was built. And this is one image that shows that. This is another view from the church. It's a 17th century church. And we have traditions living together with weaving, of course, but traditionally living together next to the Pan American Highway and next to 30 minutes away from the city and diversity. And this is what surprises me and what I love most about the village where I come from, because we grew up looking at this and living in this area and this culture. This is an image of Teotitlan women in a parade in festivity time in July. The women will dress up with the authentic traditional clothes. Only single ladies will be on this parade, and they will go through the main streets of the village in Teotitlan. Just to recap, the backstrap loom is the indigenous loom of the area of Mesoamerica, agave plants, palm plants, and of course cotton. This is very interesting. We have at least three different colors of cotton that are growing in a native way in Oaxaca. We have the Coyuchi brown cotton that you're looking at, a green cotton, and of course the white hybrid cotton. And I keep referring to the pre-Columbian times, because when the Spanish conquest happened, there was a revolution in the textile industry. The introduction of metal, the introduction of raw materials like wool, the sheep was introduced, the churra breed adapted itself to the environment in Oaxaca, and in Teotitlan in particular. And we come from a place where, as children, since we're 8 to 12 years old, as Jean-Pierre was saying, as soon as you're tall enough to reach one of those looms, you don't have a choice. You just have to be a weaver. But you learn by playing and by doing chores and by cleaning the yarn and by sweeping underneath the looms, finishing the fringes of a textile. So that was my story. I started when I was 8, my approach to textiles that my family was weaving. And eventually, when I was tall enough, I reached loom when I was 12. I was a lazy bloomer. But then, you know, we start to weave. And we are the fourth generation of weavers in my family that we know of and we can say we can keep track of. We have pictures of that. This is my family. My dad, Federico Dolores. This is me. This is Omar, or the youngest brother. This is Janet, and this is Elsa. And I'm going to let my sister to keep talking about my family and introducing my family to you.
Okay, thank you for coming. As Eric said, we come from a village of weavers, and our family is, we've been weavers for since we were born. My father, Federico Chavez Sosa, he started to weave when he was 8 years old. At 10, he sold his first rug for 8 pesos, he says. And, he has developed this. He's been a weaver for more than 40 years. And he can weave these kind of textiles like with curves and very intricate techniques, which is really, really difficult. I've been a weaver for 10 years now, and I still cannot weave a curve like as perfect as he does. So I admire him, how he can create these kind of pieces. This is my mom, Dolores Santiago. She's also a weaver. She started when she was very, very young as well. And, she is an expert in weaving frets and this nail design. But in the last years, she has been motivated to weave a little bit more of the nature, a little bit more contemporary, like butterflies, as you see there. Always trying to keep traditional patterns, but mixing it with more contemporary as well. So she also loves a lot dyeing with natural sources. So she's the one who always is encouraging the family to make the dyeings with the recipes Eric developed as well. Then we have Eric. As he said, he started to weed when he was 12 years old. And he learned from my dad, and he is the one who started with this research about how to use natural dyes. And he is the one who taught my family, my parents, myself, how to do the dyes. Right now, as the coordinator of the education department of the Textile Museum, he has developed these workshops where he can share about a little bit of this knowledge and giving this kind of Anil workshop. This is the youngest brother, Omar. He started to weave when he was 8 years old. And, his challenge now of him, as he says, is that he wants to be better than my dad weaving curves. So he is getting it right now, and he's doing a very good job. Very different from my dad, but he is working hard. Then myself, I started to weave for the first time when I was 15 years old. For women, for my generation, it's like a little bit difficult now that girls can weave. They have other chores. But I really wanted to learn how to weave. I knew by seeing my parents how to weave, I knew how to the loom worked. But it wasn't until I became 15 that I asked my parents to teach me for real, in a real loom. So these are some of the pieces I have woven, very contemporary. I also, as part of my family, as contribution to my family, I've been teaching weaving workshops like this and presentations here in the U.S., sharing the knowledge and the tradition that we have. Also, I'm part of this community, and I'm also participate in these celebrations that we have in the village. So every year, every July, I have to dress, and I have to hold a basket that it's really, really heavy. And I have to go all around the main streets in the village holding this basket. And, the basket is really heavy, but also the custom that we wear, it's really, really heavy. And I have to be holding this basket and wearing like this for 4 or 5 hours. So I really love it.
What Jen is not saying is that there's a saying in the village that reads that the ladies who attend to this parade and feel are tired after going through the parade and tired mostly, and they even get hurt sometimes of doing this tour for about 5 hours. The one who feels the most tired is because they are paying for their sins. So she's not saying that.
But I never get tired.
And just going back a little bit more to Tetitlan's environment and history, I want to talk about the tradition and history of weaving there in our village. This is a traditional, how a traditional house looks like in Tetitlan. As Jean-Pierre was saying, about 5,000 people living in the village. We might be a little bit more now. Zapotec community, and I know that we have at least 2,000 looms in the whole village. I do not know anyone who's from Tetitlan and who doesn't know anything or anything about weaving. And all my friends are weavers. I was saying the loom was introduced after the Spanish conquest. So those looms have been very well known and managed now for almost 500 years, working with wool and working on these, in developing newer and bigger looms. But before we had those larger looms that we have now to produce and satisfy textiles and give textiles to a market, we weavers used to weave two pieces, like in this image, and then sew them together, like you see here in the center. So they counted a pair of elbows to make one of those clothes, and that was the widest textile loom that we had. And those were used for blankets. Those images are from a book called Zapotec Weavers and are showing those Saltillo-style sarape textiles from the 19th century, early 19th century, also produced in Oaxaca. And the patterns and the inspiration where many of those textiles come from are encrypted and carved in these temples and stones, Mitla, Monte Alban, and in particular, those are from Teotitlan, in our church. So it's a very long history of weaving, developing designs, trendings, Picasso reproductions, and many other textiles and influences. The Smithsonian Magazine wrote an article which was very interesting in 2003 about Teotitlan del Valle and the way and standard of living of Zapotecs. And in this study and this article, they mention that Teotitlan, among many other indigenous villages in Latin America, was the one that had the highest standard of living from their crafts, selling rugs, not drugs. They made this study in Latin American indigenous communities, which it's very interesting because the huge boom of textile sales happened in the 70s and 80s in Teotitlan. It was when the Pan American Highway was finally opened, and then we had the presence of importers coming mainly from the U.S. to buy textiles and eventually post orders, special orders, with huge quantities of textiles. Literally thousands of textiles and weavers producing those orders to send and export back to the U.S. There's a lot of history and a lot of information about this topic. I'm not going to be able to go through all of it. It is very interesting, but that's mainly where and how Tetitlan was known in the world for producing textiles. In 2001, 9/11, after that event, we had a decrease of sales in textiles, and we had these thousands of weavers competing each other for a fierce competition in weaving, secrecy in dyeing techniques, in designs, and it has been decreasing more and more with time. Another topic that I'm very interested in talking to you about is the use of the dyes. To satisfy this huge demand of textiles in the 80s and 90s, importers will bring a palette of colors to be used, and the weavers will have to manage to dye their fibers using mostly synthetic dyes that you buy in plastic containers, and very harmful, by the way, and toxic, especially if you think of the impact that this environmental impact that this could have in a village of thousands of weavers that were not previously trained on how to manage those specific kind of dyes. You have to fix and set those on the fibers with very strong acids that are very harmful for the dyer, but also for the soil. This is mainly why I was very moved and interested on looking for the use of sustainable dyes and natural dyes. Coming from Oaxaca, it's the home of those beautiful sources of the eyes, cochineal, which is so important for the color history, indigo. We have a species of indigo that is native to America and that grows in a wild manner in Oaxaca as well, and the purple shellfish, which also grows in Oaxaca, among many others. I mean, Oaxaca's biodiversity is huge, and the environment has provided all of those different materials to be used as fiber materials, but also as dye materials. I would like to go a little bit into cochineal, just because it's my passion to be a dyer, really. That's the process that I love the most of all the weaving. Cochineal, nochesli known in Nahuatl, the blood of the tuna, not the tuna fish, but the tuna, the fruit, the Dactylopius coccus, the Latin name for it. It's an insect that grows on, in a wild manner on a prickly pear cactus. Nowadays, worldwide, we're consuming tons of that insect on daily products. And it's an insect that is native to the dry valley of Puebla and Oaxaca. But nowadays, it's not being produced anymore in our area. The largest producers of cochineal are Peru, Bolivia, and Chile, and the Canary Islands are still producing a very low percentage. It grows on a cactus like this. You're looking at the actual insect here, the bug. It takes about 3 months to grow it and then to develop the color and then to harvest. It is extremely interesting because when Spaniards came to America and came to Oaxaca, this is 1521, the red color or the source for reds in Europe and the Middle East was mainly the red matter. Kermes was used a little bit, but when they got here to Oaxaca, as children are nowadays playing with yarns and threads, they saw red on walls and textiles on everywhere, and they immediately took the monopoly of the cochineal insect and named it grain, grana cochinilla. Grana cochinilla is of course grain, and as you can see in this image, you cannot tell that it's an insect. So when they took it back to Europe, other empires did not know what this was, and for many years it was a secrecy. It was a secret. This is the female insect, and this is the male insect right here. So you get the color by grinding the insect and getting the powder out of it. What is very interesting in a chemical point of view is that the active dye contained within the insect is called carminic acid. And that carminic acid happens to be a pH meter. So by manipulating the pH of your dye vats, you could create different shades of colors. If you're playing with acid solutions, you will get colors that will go towards the yellow, reds, and oranges. If you go on the opposite side by using an alkaline, you will get maroons, magenta, purples. This is skeins of yarn that we developed in my family. To be honest, I struggled with this to get recipes. As I was saying, Tetitlan is a big community of weavers. Many secrets are kept for families. And you will think, why won't you just ask your father to teach you the use of natural dyes? Believe it or not, 12 years ago when I was looking into the use of natural dyes, my father, my parents didn't know much about how to use them. My grandparents didn't know much either. I can tell you now that not all of the textiles are produced with natural dyes. For many reasons, we don't have suppliers of these insects as we used to. But I can definitely see now that there's a revival in the use of those natural dyes, and that's what excites us very much. And our function in the place where I work, the museum, is to do research and to offer people, weavers, general public, information and workshops about how to use them and how to develop them in a sustainable way. Some of the uses of the cochineal. redcoats of the British Army till last year when we last checked. They were still 100% world diet with cochineal, Campari, the Italian drink, cochineal diet, lipsticks, many brands, ice creams, candies, drinks, yogurts are among that list. There was a very interesting article about Starbucks using cochineal. And as a dyer, as soon as I was able to get those colors, I love playing with gradation of colors, and cochineal is really what I love the most. This is one textile, the very first textile I wove after I got those shades of colors. And luckily, my father was willing to learn and to be eager to know about the use of natural dyes, and that's my father, and this is my father and mother using natural dyes. They've been working with them now for at least 8 years, and all the textiles produced in our family are now using natural dyes. We're going to move to the last part of the presentation. Janet gets to tell you about her personal work in development in San Pablo.
Okay. With the background of the family and my background of textiles, I had a very, a switch, really, really representative in my life. I work in a very brand new academic center and cultural in Oaxaca City, which is located in a 16th century convent. It used to be a convent. Now it is working as this academic center. It's called San Pablo. The mission of San Pablo is to focus and to show the linguistic and cultural diversity of Oaxaca State, but also from the country. We are focusing a lot on indigenous communities, indigenous villages, and we've been sharing a little bit about of their tradition. Like we have had this celebration for the cacao bean, which in many villages the cacao bean is very, very important for celebrations. And there are drinks that are especially done for special events in the village. In my area, education area, I also I'm in charge of letting people know about the history of the place, of the building itself, sharing what's about the construction, the restoration of the building. But also I'm in charge of developing this Zapotec program so I can teach Zapotec not only to indigenous people but also people who live in the city and they don't have any relationship with any indigenous language. So the idea of having these courses in San Pablo is to show people to value this cultural diversity and linguistic diversity that we have in the city, and then we can appreciate people who come from these villages and still have this heritage. Also, I love this job a lot, and I have the opportunity as well to make a fusion between what I'm doing regarding to linguistic and cultural diversity. I can related this with textiles, and I've been I'm like the coordinating also these events, textile events, with Eric, together with Eric in San Pablo, and sharing this tradition as well, like textile and how the textile can tell you something. So that's basically what I'm doing now, and it's something very different from it's common in Teotitlan. It's not really common. So most of the women in Teotitlan, they young women, many of them, they stay in their house with their mothers, learning how to cook or how to do things in the house. So they are getting prepared to get married. In my case, I had the support of my parents since I was very young. I really wanted to go to college, and my parents supported me to do this. And then because I have this degree in languages, I could do something else, like still trying to keep my tradition of weaving, but also developing myself in a more professional area, doing what I really like to do, which is teaching and share with people what I know. So that's basically what I'm doing now in Oaxaca.
And the last part of what it's talking about, what we do in professional life, coming from a village, as Janet was saying, it's very it's a little bit complicated to be adapted in a city. Oaxaca, it's 500,000 people. The population is a pretty large city. Believe it or not, people living in the city 30 minutes away from Tetitlan didn't even know that we weave there. I mean, that's how bad it is, really, for appreciating the culture that we have right in front of our eyes. We pass by markets of Texas, beautiful convents and churches, every day that we just so used to see them and not really care about them. I work for the Textile Museum of Oaxaca, Museo Textil de Oaxaca, and this is a private museum owned by the Alfredo Harp Helú Foundation, and I have to talk a little bit about them because it's thanks to these people that we have many cultural activities and cultural life in Oaxaca. In Oaxaca, in Mexico, it's becoming one of the states that has this largest cultural and diversity of cultural life. This is how our building looks like. It used to be the former convent of San Pablo, dated of 1529, recently restored in 2007. This is the interior of our building and our museum. And this is the family that's sponsoring it, Mr. Alfredo Harp and Maria Isabel. And really, it's a beautiful space. We have an education department where I work. We have a conservation lab where all of those textiles are go through before they're an exhibit. We have a warehouse with 278 textiles till last week when I checked, and there will be more coming. So even though it's called Museo Textil de Oaxaca, it doesn't necessarily have only Oaxacan textiles in exhibition. And the reason why that is because we live in a context of thousands of active weavers. So what about them? What are they going to see? And they've been very appreciative of finding a place like this and finding parallels in cultures. Threads being woven in Sumatra as they've been woven in Oaxaca, and they've been woven also here. It's part of the job that we do. This is the interior of one of our exhibit rooms showing hand-woven textiles on backstrap looms. Even weavers themselves, they have been feeling more interested in preserving their textiles and their textile heritage, which is so valuable for us because many of those communities and villages, we thought that they wouldn't even remember and will keep alive these traditions. So we have all exhibits are temporary. Dyes, animals, working really in a very narrow relationship with the active weavers. We invite weavers to come and look at our collection of textiles, of ancient textiles. They remember designs. They look at those old pieces, and then we invite them or take the textiles back to their community. So conservation is a very important issue at the museum. And how did I get into the museum? I was traveling in 2008 in the United States looking for my master's degree, and I had the opportunity of talking about the use of natural dyes and diversity in textile diversity in Oaxaca. This was in the east in North Carolina, mainly where we were doing this. when I read that a textile museum was about to open in Oaxaca, and I couldn't believe that. I came back to Oaxaca. I had an interview with the director back then, and she said, well, I don't know, we don't have many positions available right now. And I said, can I have 5 minutes of your time to talk about education? Do you have an education department already? And she said, we do have a space. We don't have a program yet. Then I said, let me make the proposal for that program. And 2 weeks later, I was invited to work with them and created the education department, which I think it's essential for this museum. And for me as a weaver, imagine thousands of weavers, techniques, dyes, specialists coming from all over the world to the museum and visiting. It's like paradise for someone like me. And I've been learning and getting to work with weavers in a very close manner. I've been learning about how respectful they are of their techniques, how complex their techniques are. Even though I'm a weaver, I've also learned that some of those techniques are extremely difficult and intricate, woven on a thread loom. And we also been able, through the department and through the museum, to be in charge of hosting very nice and interesting people who have come and made documentaries or reviews or write articles about the weaving tradition of Oaxaca. We also been very lucky to find weavers that are willing to do this with us, willing to share and to open their homes and their knowledge to with us. Books, documentaries, promotion, and a very straight and strict relation with weavers. We have programs such as inviting graphic designers to volunteer and work with weavers to develop branding and merchandising and help the weavers. Of course, the weavers that want to. We also have so many communities in Oaxaca that are not looking to sell their textiles. They make them for self-consumption only. And this is a great, great value for us because we learn about their what their interests are too. These ladies, they speak only Mixtec. They came to the museum and they shared with us very important information about very old textiles that we had, and they took some images and samples of those textiles to be reproduced now back again. In the time that I've been working there, I've been able to travel, go to many other communities, 2 hours, 3 hours, up to 8 hours away from the city. And the further we go, we find greater and greater and very amazing textiles and people. And also the museum is a space that opens its doors to the weavers and to the public to come and see the ethnographic collection of textiles that we have. We open our exhibit rooms to contemporary weavers to come also and to exhibit and show their textiles. I've been teaching workshops there. That was the hardest thing. A brand new museum in Oaxaca, of course, a textile museum. No one knew about it when it started, and no one wanted to teach or to do anything with us. So I started by teaching. And slowly but surely, we got weavers willing to come, opened to share, and willing to work. We have also programs for children. And this is very important. We believe that we have to start early to encourage them and to appreciate the work and the value of a textile. As I was saying, believe it or not, people pass by textiles in markets in Oaxaca and don't even know how they're made, what materials are used, and, of course, they don't know who made them. As a weaver and as a dyer and as an educator here at the museum, I've been able to take what was a very personal dream in the past of thinking one day, what if someday we'll, as native people from Oaxaca, will go back to use our textiles and use also natural dyes in a sustainable way. But that was just me weaving in my loom many years ago. then the Texas Museum happened. It's a living project. They gave me the opportunity of doing it, and somehow I get to feel that we're accomplishing that with the fabulous team we have at the museum. I know we're very young. We're only 4 years old since the museum opened. Oaxaca is huge, and Mexico is huge, and, of course, the world is huge with those this diversity of textiles. But we're trying to get there, and starting young, working with children, it's our best bet. Back in our communities, we're giving back also to the children that live in our family. We invite them to come to the museum. We invite weavers to come to the museum, and we give them special guided tours. And we just started a program where we go out to the communities and we give a prize to kindergartens and elementary schools in communities in Oaxaca where their children that attend are dressing in their traditional costumes as a daily uniform for school. This is amazing. We found many communities doing this, and they feel happy to be acknowledged and to be honored with our presence as a textile museum. Now I think this is finally happened. I thank you all very much for waiting, being patient, and coming here to see the presentation we have. We'll move on to the questions, and just want to leave you with this image. This is what we have. We feel very proud of. We have families coming together and working and exchange all the time. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Is this on?
Yeah.
So questions, anyone?
Where is the raw material coming from? My understanding is that it's all coming from New Zealand, and that Mexico hasn't been able to produce any kind of raw material except for the cotton, mm-hmm. which actually is very abusive to the land, so there's very little of it. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to get that fabulous, that beautiful cotton that you were showing mm-hmm. earlier, mm-hmm. That is something that it's produced very minimally, mm-hmm. and the quality of wool that's available is very poor mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. Oaxaca. I was always very curious, why is it that Mexico is not able to produce a high-quality wool mm-hmm. and has to import it? Mm-hmm. That's my first mm-hmm. question.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very good question. We at the museum think about it too, because to make it sustainable, we have to produce locally and get high quality materials. Of course, while the boom of textiles in Teotitlan 70s, 80s, and 90s, and even now in the 2000s, we as weavers in Teotitlan, there was a factory of yarn that was opened in 1983 to serve this purpose, using churra sheep breed of wool. The churra sheep was the only breed that adapted itself to the weather in Oaxaca. That is the reason why Merino, for example, did not grow its wool, and this is written in codexes when the Spaniards wanted to introduce sheep. We also have in Oaxaca one factory of mill of yarn, and it's owned by European people, and they're producing, they're importing robin from New Zealand and Australia and Peru to provide these fine threads. We have also hand spun makers of yarn, and as you said, their yarn that we can get locally, it's very high and rich in lanolin, and it gets to be very rough and not as fine or appealing to many people. But these materials are used mainly for self-consumption in some textiles, and we encourage actually the use of those materials. Unfortunately, as you said, yes, a lot of those materials have to be imported when it comes to finding high quality and super fine textiles to serve and produce textiles for a specific market. Cotton is another issue. We just
3 months ago, we had the visit of a weaver from the coast of Oaxaca who said that she will give us samples of 9 different colors of native cotton that grow in the coast of Oaxaca. This is not a large production, of course. This is it has to be hand-spun. And, of course, if you wanted to get something super fine in terms of the aesthetic of it, I don't know, to be wearing, you will have to buy machine-spun cotton that it's available locally. But also you could get Egyptian cotton. You can import that, too. So really it all depends, and we're facing now a revolution again in the textile industry because textiles are becoming now popular again in Oaxaca and in Mexico, and materials is definitely an issue that we are going to be looking into and would like to promote the use of sustainable ways in Oaxaca. I hope that answers your question. We can certainly keep talking about it.
I think that was a great point, just to comment on that, because I saw that real high-end, kind of more aesthetically, quality-wise, world-class things being planned with local materials, and they do have beautiful materials there, which just that it would be more costly. So the consumer has to understand the difference and pay for it. I just wanted to also add, because we had, Eric was in the workshop, our group organized recently, a natural dyeing workshop, and he was fantastic in learning and exchanging information with Michelle Garcia, French botanist chemist. But that they are, what impressed us all was that Oaxaca, not only the tradition, but also that Jardin Ethnobotanical, it's a fantastic regional botanical garden, and also CASA, Centro de las Artes San Agustin of Francisco Toledo, and they were able to have the breadth of contemporary to tradition and international to regional. All of that is you can find in that region. And I think, why is that Oaxaca so active in this kind of a cultural diversity and contemporary? And I was very curious to find that.
Oh, thank you, Yoshiko. Thank you very much.
I'm very inspired by your presentation. And
let me just please just answer Yoshiko's question. Oaxaca, it is the place to be for this diversity. I personally think that it's thanks to this biodiversity, but also to some characters that we as Oaxacans have been lucky to have in our area. Of course, Francisco Toledo has played a very important role in this cultural life of Oaxaca that we have now. And also the foundation, Alfredo Harfelu Foundation, they have been funding those projects. Yearly we have international festivals of music, of film festivals, textile festivals now, and we last year were hosts of the North American Conservation Conference in Oaxaca. It's mainly because of those characters who have been supportive of this cultural life. Museums, most of the museums in Oaxaca were started by these characters and by Francisco Toledo, and they and their connections, of course, have made Oaxaca a place to look for and when it comes to textile arts and arts in general in Mexico.
Thank you. It's really exemplify how individuals and the families can change the village, the country, and now the whole world. And I do have a quick question about the use of cochineal.
Yes.
Is insect.
Yes.
And when you mentioned the Starbucks used that to color the coffee, And doesn't sound it's a negative impact, but somehow I think the corporate changed the policy. They will not continue to use it. Do you know the reason why?
The article was mentioning that their pink like flavors, like the strawberry, was using the cochineal as a pigment, as a dye, and large corporations. The use of cochineal dye, the carminic acid, it's proved that it's harmless to your body. That is a very strong reason why a corporation would want to use this product as opposed to synthetic red colors that could harm eventually your body and even produce cancer. I'm sure and I believe that it's mainly that reason that we're looking at. It's a very different context in when it comes to talk about dyes in applied for fibers and textiles. This is a low impact in lower impact in communities, more local production of materials, of course. But I think that's a really, really good question. We'll have to look more into why they're shifting and changing. And I always say that with this new trend of go green, it's also thanks to that we are, as citizens of the world, are becoming more aware of using less harmful materials in what we use every day.
I'm afraid that's our last question of the day. It's we're running over time. And I'd like to thank again Jean-Pierre and Eric and Janet. If we could give them another round of applause.
Thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you. Thank you.
And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating over a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.